Hi, everybody. This is Nancy Miller from My Creative Life, the podcast about creatives, how and why they make the work that they do. And today, my special guest is return guest, Melquia Smith. She's a Black award-winning illustrator pursuing a career in illustrating books for children and children's media. She's the illustrator of The Biggest Gift of All, published by Includus Publishing, and The Time Machine, published by Cardinal Rule Press. Hey, Melquia, how are you doing?
Hello. I'm tuning in from New York City this time. Usually the holidays, I'm usually in New York City because I always tend to visit family around this time. So it's been really fun. I can't say for sure if I'm going to be in New York City around this time next year. I would love to be in Japan for Christmas. So I'm going to do my best to like plan that.
Wow. Well, that brings me to like a little bit of catch up because you were in Japan and I just drooled over the Instagram post that you were making. Can you just talk about what that was like and why you went to Japan?
Insert guttural sound. I have been wanting to go to Japan for 10 years, ever since I was in college. I had a classmate who told me to research students from the U.S. that are studying abroad in Japan and on YouTube. And I started listening to interviews and I started just like listening to their experiences. And I was hooked. I got really obsessed with Japan. I was a total otaku. Thank you to all of my other classmates and especially the Japanese folks I met on campus that were so patient with me as I was in a very cringy moment of my life. I've had that interest and excitement over Japanese culture and food and language for 10 years. And I remember having a couple of instances where I saved up money for the trip and life happened and I had to reuse that money for other things. And it's so easy to say, I'll just pay myself back. You know, I can't, you know, if it's someone else's money, you would definitely not say, oh, well, yeah, I'll just take this $5K and pay you back. No, it's so easy to do it for yourself. And so life was lifing and it got to a point where I said, you know what, if I don't do this now, I'm never going to do it. And so I started making plans and I started just keeping an eye out for flight deals. I'm also in like the credit card points and miles game. So I was able to start my journey in that while making sure that I had to stay on top of my own finances and not overdo it, because it's so easy to say, well, I just opened up this new credit card, but I have to spend X amount by this time. So I'm just going to, I don't know, buy cashmere sweaters or whatever, just so that I can make the spending goal or whatever. And so so I had to be really deliberate with that. And I ended up hiring someone to help me book the flights to Japan. I had 2 one-way tickets to Japan. One from Washington. I speak in airport codes now because apparently that's a part of my personality. But IAD to Haneda, and then from Narita to Chicago or D, and both of those were in business class. So it was a wild experience. I was in Japan for 3 weeks, and it's just. I can't get enough of it. So I need to go back.
Well, that's so awesome. Can you talk about the food? Because it looked fantastic. What was like your favorite meal or favorite experience that you had on the trip?
Oh, gosh. The thing is that I love Japanese food. So I could not get enough of the food. And funnily enough, I really like just going to Family Mart and just getting meals from there. Like, I always say, I have this little saying, it's like Family Mart has my heart, because every time I go into one of those, they always have good food. They always have something that I can like heat up. I can like put it in my little refrigerator, my little Airbnb that I was staying in. And I love the little jingle that that you would hear every time you would walk in. And it was open 24 hours. So it's like, if you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're like, I want some of that soft Japanese bread and some ice cream. You can get some pants on, go outside and walk at 3 o'clock in the morning and go get yourself some bread and ice cream. It was so cool. And to me, it was very freeing to be able to have that autonomy and be able to just do that. But for the food, yeah, no, I love the pre-cooked meals at Family Mart. The first thing I remember getting was like the onigiri, because I was just like, I don't know. I was just like, okay, I just arrived here. I need food. I got to figure something out. I'm going to go for the tried and true rice and salmon. And the salmon rice balls were my favorite. I love the mapo tofu, even though that's a Chinese dish. It was so good. I was craving that when I came back home. And so I ended up making some just as like a little homage to my time just eating on the floor of my futon on the tatami mat, like watching TV. I remember having like sukiyaki. Was it sukiyaki? I think that's what I'm imagining. It's kind of like this like hot pot type of situation where it's like almost like a, how do I explain it? It's like a hot broth, and then you can dip like meat, and you can dip your meat inside there or dip your meat in the egg and put it inside the broth. That was my first meal that I had. And it was so funny because like going to restaurants, it was so terrifying for me because I didn't have a good command. I don't have a good command of Japanese. Like I know more Spanish than I do Japanese. And well, that's not going to get me super duper far. But I have a story for that one too. And so I had to figure out ways to like order in Japanese, but I didn't really have like a lot. So like I knew a few like keywords like nomimasu ka, which is like to drink, or would you like something to drink? And so I was like, oh, okay, at least I know what they're asking. Okay. Kore kudasai. Like, you know, be able to point on the menu and saying thank you and just like being a polite human. And I always try to explore just like places that are not on the typical tourist path. So for example, where I stayed in Osaka, and my station was Kishinosato Station, which even some Japanese folks where I told them, they were like, that is a local station. Like some folks when I was talking to in Kyoto, they were like, even I don't know that station. And it was so interesting. And so where I was staying was like a really local spot. And I loved just trying to find different like holes in the wall. I found this one place that was, well, I can't remember what it was, but it was basically this, I don't remember what it was. But it was like this restaurant that was like hole in the wall, only has limited seating. And you ordered like whatever was on the menu, and it was like a family owned business is it Koraku? Actually, I'm going to look this up super quick. Teishoku, there it is. It's a Teishoku spot, and it's Koraku Osaka. Let's see. Ichin Matsu Nishinariku. Yes, that's it. Ahaha. Okay. So there's this place called Koraku. It's in 119 Matsu, Nishinariku in Osaka Prefecture. And it's just this hole in the wall spot that, I hope this is the right one, but it's just this little spot that you can like order food, and it's like Japanese comfort food. And it's just a really cool place. I just want to make sure that this is the right one. I think it is. Yeah. And it was the funniest thing. So I got, I got really overwhelmed a lot when I was in Osaka, especially trying to find places to eat, because there was just so many options, like so many options. And I was there. I actually went to Japan alone. It was just me. And so, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were with a partner in traveling. I just assumed. Wow.
It was just me. It was just me. I was like, you know what? At the time, I found the airline tickets, and I was just like, okay, I'm going to make this happen. Like, I'm making this happen. And yeah, I was there. It was just me, and I went alone. And that also gave me like a sense of freedom too, of like, I'd wake up every morning, like, what do I want to do today? And yeah, so it was really interesting, like stumbling and fumbling around and going to that Teishoku spot and like trying to order my broken Japanglish, and it was really good. And it was so cool because so to go back to like the being overwhelmed, I'd be, in a part of the city, and I'm looking at all these restaurants and I have no idea what I want because they all look good. And I'm sitting here and I'm nervous because I'm like, oh gosh, I'm going to fumble around. I'm not going to have the like perfect Japanese, because apparently I'm expecting myself to have perfect Japanese, not even practicing. So, and I would just, I would go, you know what? I'm just going to go to Family Mart. Family Mart has my heart. Family Mart is convenient and consistent. I didn't say anything to anyone. But I started branching out of my comfort zone and just saying, okay, I want to do this thing, so I'm going to do it. And a lot of times that has led to like the best experiences. I ended up going to I think it's a yakiniku type of spot, where they would have just like grilled meat. You'd order like different grilled parts of chicken or grilled parts of pork, and you would, have this menu. And around that same time where I forgot what location, like where I was in Osaka at this time, but I ended up again getting overwhelmed of all of these restaurants and all these places. And I was a little bit lonely too. I was like, all these people are out and they're with their folks and with their family members or with their friends or coworkers. And here I am, just a bumbling black girl with pink hair, trying to, figure out how to say this, please. And I remember going in, and I remember just like walking, just like seeing this restaurant, like, no, I don't want this. And I'd walk past and I'd see, well, no, I don't want this. And then I ended up seeing this guy on the grill just like cooking grilled meats. And I said, that's what I want. And I just like walked in, and there's this group of ladies from Kyoto. And the guy behind the grill is like, irashaimase. And I'm like, hi, arigatou gozaimasu. And, I'm like super nervous. I'm like super shy. Set my bags down. And one of the ladies says something to me, and I'm like, wakarimasen. And they all start laughing. And we're all just, and we ended up having a really nice time. And so we started like communicating using like Google Translate, and we would start, they would ask where we're from. And that's when I really started like practicing a little bit of my Japanese. So they would ask like where am I from, and I would say New York be this, and I was like, ah, New York. It's like they're like, oki desu ne, and I was like, hi, oki, like it's really big, it's a big city. And I could just say a few things like how old I was, or where was I from, and think like a few little bits. And it was just really awesome. Like, we had such a great time. And that wouldn't have happened if I, one, didn't see that grilled meat in the window, and two, didn't, for some reason, that desire just to have that overshadowed my nervousness and I just broke out of my comfort zone. And so that one, that was really cool. And I've had experiences like that throughout my travels in Japan too.
Fantastic. I'm just like in awe because it's so brave of you to go. Say I'm going to go for 3 weeks and have this amazing experience and just fulfill the dream you had when you were in college. And, you know, it's like you and the previous guest I had, David McMullins, you guys are thorough travelers. And I've always on my bucket list has been to go and travel to South Korea. I haven't been since I was like 4 years old. And I've just drooling over the YouTube videos, the podcasts that I listen to, trying to learn Korean. And I go like, oh, Leah can do it. She can go to her dream country that she's always wanted to go to. I can do it too.
Yeah.
And so it leads me to this question, like, what are some tips that for the illustrators and artists that are listening that they might want to be able to afford something like this? Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, so that, honestly, the sooner you plan, the easier it becomes. So for example, if I wanted to go to Japan in March right now, I would go into debt doing that because one, March is high season, and two, like March, April, May, like that Hanami cherry blossom season, super, super, one, inflated prices, and two, it's so soon. It's so soon. Like I would literally have thousands of dollars on my credit card trying to make this trip happen. So starting early is always the best. I think it's always the best option, even if you start with like $10 now and you know you want to do this thing in 2 years. It just gives you an idea of like how to work backwards. For me, I didn't book my flight for Japan. And so I went to Japan October 27th to November 20th. I booked my flight for my flights for those in February of this year. So for me, it was a little bit different because I did pay for a big chunk of my tickets through points and miles. I used the points and miles for the majority of that, for majority of paying for it. And then I ended up paying for the taxes and fees out of pocket. So total, I paid about $800. So yeah, so it was definitely a different case. But even if you're going to pay for like your flight tickets out of pocket, it's always good to either start early or start researching early. I use a lot of tools and things to kind of help me track flights. It's funny because you said that I'm like a thorough traveler. And it's funny because I didn't really start traveling like crazily until December of last year. It started off with my job allows me to travel technically twice a year for our staff retreats. And my sister ended up encouraging me to book a cruise right after the staff retreat. We had a staff retreat in New Orleans, and right in New Orleans, there's a port that you can take a cruise directly from. And so when she encouraged me to book a cruise, and that was my first ever solo cruise to Mexico. And it was my first. I was hooked after that. And then fast forward to now, I've been in 4 countries in the past year. So I've been in Spain, France, Chile, and Japan, and I've been in a ton of cities. Like I have to go through my Google Maps, or not the Google Maps thing, but the Google locations where they tell you where you've been. I've been in so many places this year. Like I feel like I've been home less than I've been away from home. And so with that all being said, I guess I just started being a traveler this year. But back to like tips, definitely trying to plan it early. I have a Google Doc where I start like compiling information, rough estimates on other people's, like super rough estimates on like how much should it cost roughly for someone to travel to a certain place for a certain period of time. So I can't remember the website. There's a website that you can search, and it's just average prices for average self-reported prices from other folks who've traveled to this place on how much they've spent to a specific place. So for example, if you wanted to go to Seoul, South Korea for a week, and you are a budget traveler, so you'll stay in a hostel, you tend to try to eat the street food or the cheapest foods, and you try to do free things, it might cost around this amount for one person. It might cost around this much for a couple, and it might cost around this much for a family. And then they'll have different tiers. So if you're like a mid-tier traveler, or you're a luxury traveler, this is the giant gap of how much you are expected to spend. Or so that is always a good help, like a good tactic first is just like thinking about prices. For me, I tend to inflate prices. So I'll say, for example, I want to spend, $400 or $500 on food for a month in Japan or so. And technically, food is not that expensive in Japan. Also adding on the fact that I have the USD privilege and the passportism privilege and all that jazz. And the US to yen thing is in conversion is in our favor. But I kind of keeping that in mind. And just throwing random numbers first and just saying, okay, ideally, I'd like to spend about $1,000 on accommodations for this amount of time. So that's one tactic. Another tactic of being able to keep prices relatively low, but not relatively or much lower, would be staying in one spot. A lot of folks, especially when they go to Japan for the first time or any like big destination place, they tend to go to like Osaka, Kyoto, this place in like the span of 7 days. And of course it's going to be so expensive because you're booking a hotel or you're booking Airbnbs. You're booking like five of them in the span of like 7 days. So what I did in Osaka, I parked my butt in the same place and I stayed there for 3 weeks. And I had day trips and I went out and I stayed in that place. And hopefully for the next one, I'll stay in the Tokyo area and just stay my butt there, because it's so much cheaper. And if people are pro Airbnb, I have mixed feelings, but man, sometimes I tell you, I still miss my little apartment. But Airbnb will sometimes have discounts, like weekly discounts or monthly discounts, depending on the host. So if you stay there and you park there, you'll be able to have like a discount. It might be the same for hotels. It might be the same for apartments that you can rent. I personally would love to look into a short-term apartment for a month. That's also opportunities to save money. The most expensive things of travel is where am I going to stay and how am I going to get there? That's always the most expensive. So flight tickets and accommodations. So those things, if you square that out sooner, it's much easier to be able to save money, especially now that like Japan itself is feeling really popular. Like I remember looking at prices in Japan of November of last year, and prices were so low. Oh my gosh. And then when I started relooking at prices closer to March of this year, the prices that I collected for hotel rooms were completely null and void because the prices shot up. And I was like, whoa, I should have booked everything sooner. But it worked out. That's just a few ideas. And then for flights are interesting. For like credit card points and miles is not a one size fits all approach for folks. I think you definitely have to be cognizant of your finances and definitely cognizant of how it works and just doing a lot of research. But that's one option. And another option is by like subscribing to flight deal alerts. So for me, I have a subscription to going.com. And basically the website itself allows me to track flight deals for specific airports. So for example, I have like a local, my local airport, and then I'll also I'll also keep track of like the bigger airports nearby. So IND, like the Washington, I'll just like look at the states nearby and see if like, okay, I'm really flexible and I'm able to kind of travel to like an airport that's much out of my way for a cheaper flight deal. So for example, like a JFK or LaGuardia, because I'm in the state of New York, we could rent a car from where I am and then just drive directly to the airport, and I'll be able to catch my flight from there and vice versa. It is an extra step, and sometimes it gets annoying. So I am looking more into flying directly from my local airport, but that's one way of doing it. And there's so many different like tactics you can use, depending on your flexibility and depending on the way that you travel, where you can save a lot more money with flying to a place. So that's usually that. At least that's what I. Yeah, that's usually that.
Any tips for saving?
One thing is, well, a lot of folks say make it automatic. Like when you're saving for things, have the savings become automatic. So let's say you have a 9-to-5 and you have checks that come in, your direct deposits, have X amount of money automatically go into a separate travel fund. I definitely have a separate travel fund completely away from my main account. So I have like a main checking account, which is like from my local bank. And then I use Ally as like a high yield savings account. And even though it's a hassle and a half, like it's such a hassle to like take money out of it. And it's an online bank, so I can't physically go to a place and withdraw that money. I am a lot more hands-on with my finances. I love, like, every time I get paid, I love to go, okay, I'm getting this much money, I'm putting this here, I'm putting this in my emergency fund, I'm putting this in my my oh crap fund, I'm putting this in my art fund. Like, so I like to be a lot more hands-on and move things around. I'm a lot more emotional with my finances. So for example, I knew that I was going to go through a severe drop after I came back from Japan. So I allocated a large chunk of my paycheck towards my Japan 2024 fund, because I just knew I needed some sort of instant gratification. And I was just like, all right, I'm going to put a big chunk of money in my Japan fund so that I could just feel a little bit better that I'm home. Like, so knowing yourself is step one. I knew that I'm very emotional when it comes to money sometimes. So I knew that I wanted to like my actions to reflect that. So for example, that big chunk of money towards Japan, I feel a lot better knowing that I actually have funds in there. So if something pops up or a flight deal happens today, tomorrow, the next week, I can actually act upon it. So separate savings account for sure. High yield savings account if you can help it. Some folks say, like some finance gurus say, making things automatic. I don't, because I just move things around so much that I've had many overdrafts because of making things automatic. So I'm doing my best on that. I also like to kind of revisit like my goals and revisit like my savings goals, so that when it's time, so like for example, I have like a trip saving plan for like, I had a trip saving plan for 2022, and so I had an idea of like how much did I need to take out of per paycheck and how much did I need to take out of certain things. I also allocate certain windfalls to trip savings. So for example, I have like a rule set of if I have a windfall and I'm in debt, if I have a windfall, I'm in debt a certain amount, then I will put the money towards that debt. For example, like my solar loan or my mortgage, that's a little bit different, but it's getting paid automatically. But let's say I have like credit card debt or something like that, then I'll put preference onto that. If I am not in debt, that's going to my fund. Like that is for me. And sometimes illustration paychecks will go into that as well. So to preface this for the listeners, I do have a 9-to-5 job that does pay for like all of my expenses and all of my home things. And then for any illustration work that I do, that is all additional income, and that goes towards business stuff as well as fun stuff as well. After Uncle Sam takes his cut.
It's very up and down. And so it's like, you don't know, like, oh, I've got to stretch this amount of money for an entire year before you will see another lump sum. And then and nowadays I've heard it's just broken up into 3 lump sums. So it's like quite a long haul before you fully get paid.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So all of this is great advice, because it's like, I find finances to be probably one of the most stressful things that a freelancer, illustrator, author, whatever creative you are, will be dealing with.
Oh, for sure. It's definitely, and it's funny, because to me, finances are an emotional thing as well, especially for, like, I'll just say it right now, I like money, I'll do my best to like figure out like the nitty gritty of like finances and figuring that out. But I was not always like that. Like in the last few years ago, I would not want to talk about budgeting or any of that stuff. And it was a long time of me just doing like a lot of self-learning and kind of quote unquote getting right with money in order to be able to actually have these kind of conversations. And so, you know, finances are really tough for a lot of folks. And it really is just knowing who you are and knowing like how you handle, not how you handle it, but how you feel about finances, and really taking stock of that. And then using tactics that work for that type of personality type. For example, I don't really automate, because I like being hands-on with my finances every week or every check or whatever. And automation in some aspects are helpful, but you know, I'd rather have, for example, I have a utilities fund. So I do have automatic things coming out of it. So for example, you know, my solar loan, my water bill, National Grid, like all those things that will be automatically come out of a certain savings account. But I have, when I name the account, and I put a certain amount of money in the name of the account. So utilities fund, $500, and utilities fund, and it's named $500. And I try to keep that certain amount in every month so that I know that when that money comes out, it will be sufficient in that amount. So it's just kind of like figuring out what you've learned in the finance journey, but at the same time using tactics that work best for you. And just experiment too. Just because you decide to automate, you know, having $50 come out of your, you know, paycheck every other week, doesn't mean you can't stop it, and doesn't mean you can't, you know, prevent it from happening in the future if it doesn't work for you.
Good advice. I feel like definitely finances and illustration were not really fully discussed when I was in any form of, you know, like college. You know, it's kind of talked about, but it's kind of glossed over. And
yeah,
been extremely helpful talking to other creatives, other creators, because they're dealing with it in the present. And like you said, everybody deals with it in a little bit different way, how they feel about finances. So I've always liked little tidbits that I can apply. Probably one of the biggest ones, I listened to an interview with Sean Tan, and he said he just lived like a college student for a very long time. Like he had no money. He pretended like I have no money. So, and that was how he got, you know, by. It was very frugal. And I think there is something about being frugal, because I think that's helped me a lot more in terms of, like, I learned the hard lesson. Like, I had student loan debt the first time with my undergrad. I had all the usual debt that most people, like credit card, car debt, and all of this stuff. Makes it so difficult. If you're just trying to get those things paid, you can't really do the creative work. You're just so stressed out. You're like, it's like, and then you feel like I have to focus all my energies on the things that are going to be paying off those things. Mm-hmm. Because really, when you do creative work, the payoff is not anywhere soon.
Not at all.
Yeah. So, and that's just how it is. It's par for the course. So figuring out ways to rework things in order to make that creative life happen, or the travel things that you want to live light. Like I always say, you want to also live and enjoy your life, and you don't want to just be like working to pay off these debts. It's not a lot of fun.
No. And I think too that like, it's also totally okay to know where your strengths and rooms, like abilities for improvement are. So for example, I was thinking about an artist who said that that they have almost like, I think it's dyscalculia, or it's basically a fear of numbers and finances, or like this really extreme reaction when it's time to deal with finances and numbers. And they ended up hiring, when they had the time and they had the resources, they hired someone to help them with it. And like someone probably on retainer. And when it became time for tax time, they had someone that would like walk them through and hold their hand throughout the situation, like throughout it. Or, you know, for example, like I'm pretty sure there are each community or every other community, especially if you're in a larger city, might have resources where you're able to work with someone like a finance professional, either pro bono, or there's like an organization or something where they offer these kinds of services, just to at the very least get like financial planning in order, and just kind of helping you work through that. I think there are like finance therapists too, because again, like finances are emotional, at least to me they are. And so finances are, for many people, make or break. Like if you don't have money, you can't live. If you don't have money, you can't eat. So these, and also our parents and our grandparents, their relationship to money, like it's definitely something that, like keep in mind. And I think finances are complicated. They're simple, and they're complicated when you add the human aspect to it as well. Another thing that I tend to do too is determine like what are my primary focuses. So for example, or what's something that I value. So right now I value travel a lot more than I value name brand clothes or something like that. If someone values getting their hair done or getting their makeup done, that's something that they'll prioritize more of their finances for, instead of travel, or, you know, in addition to. So depending on like what, or shoot, going to an art store and getting lost in the sauce and seeing all of the beautiful colored pencils and watercolors and just, you know, just having a bunch of stuff in your arms and just saying, I got excited. You know, that's a great way of like determining like, well, okay, what is this something that I value, and allocating your finances or allocating some savings towards that. Now this of course is, I don't know about folks who are who have income that is not reliable, or, you know, folks who do illustration work or author work, and that's their main source of income. So it takes a little bit of a different approach. But I think the principles remain the same of just like knowing what your main finances are, knowing what the non-negotiables are, and then the nice to haves. And the non-negotiables can be the mortgage or the rent or car note or credit card debt and things like that. And then also realizing like what is important right now. So what is, you know, if paying off debt is the most important, then by all means, absolutely. I love listening to finance podcasts. So I love listening to one called Journey to Launch. That one's really helpful with just like, for me, like staying on track and staying like motivated to become financially independent. I love listening to the Money with Katie show. That's also a really good one. I love the fact that she's my age and she's like this, in a sense, I don't know if I'd say finance guru, but at the very least, just like, to me, I feel like she knows her stuff and I love it. And her production quality is pretty nice. I love it a lot. I also love on YouTube, they have a channel called The Financial Diet. And there's also Clever Girl Podcast? I think it's Clever Girl Podcast. Yeah, that's another one that I like to listen to. So I love listening to like finance podcasts, and a lot of them are the same. Like, it's kind of like, how do you budget? How do you do this? How do you do that? And I know that stuff already, but there are some things that I do like to, there are some things that I really like to listen to of like, what do you do after you pay off all your debts? You know, like, where do you allocate your money now? Like, what's next after this? And I like to listen to those types of podcasts, even though I'm not in that stage just yet. Just to kind of keep me motivated to be able to become financially independent and get rid of my debts, and being able to be able to like imagine that kind of future, because it's possible for sure.
Emily, well, I appreciate all of your advice, financial and travel, and congratulations on your books that have come out. And also want to congratulate, because you also one of them won an award. I think that's fantastic. And I think also you posted something that I can't remember which title it was, but I think it was at ALA. They had it on the shelves and everything for the librarians and all of them to, you know, see. So congratulations. It's fantastic.
Thank you. It's been so interesting having both of those books. This whole year's been a blur. And it's been really interesting, like, having those two books published. And It's so funny because The Time Machine is like the gift that keeps on giving. Like, there was a Kirkus editor review that was on there too. Like, and I was like, wait, I was like, what? Like, I just happened to see that on Instagram on my publisher's page. And I was like, what? Wow, this is crazy. So, and this is only the beginning. This is what, three books already that's been published total that I've illustrated. So I'm interested to see what 2024 will hold. But for now, a nice long break.
Well, since this is a podcast and there's no video, where can people find out more about your work and your book?
Yes. So I am on my website at prettykittypaintings.com. Hopefully, when this comes out, I should have my email list relaunched. And that's going to be something that I'm going to prioritize in 24 and beyond, where I'm able to just send folks emails about the things that I'm working on, or even just like things about how it is working as an illustrator in the publishing industry. Especially right now, my focus is to get my portfolio up to snuff again. So that's going to be a fun journey. And I'm going to take my subscribers along that journey of figuring out, well, how do you figure out how to plan for this, you know? And I'm also on Instagram at Pretty Kitty Paintings as well.
Well, everybody, please go check out her work. It's fantastic, her wonderful books, and I just love your spirit. Malkuit, you're always welcome to come back and chat with us. Yes, and everybody else, thank you for listening to My Creative Life. Bye.